Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up Podcast. I'm Chris Solomon, joined today by 2015 Masters champion, U.S. Open champion, and recently the 2016 Australian Open champion, Jordan Spieth. Jordan, you had a week off last week. How did you celebrate the win? It happened to be Thanksgiving week as well. How did you deal with the week off?
Yeah, we stayed a couple extra days in Australia. Came back Tuesday. Got to spend Thanksgiving at home, see family, friends. The last couple years, the Aussie Open was actually on Thanksgiving, so it's kind of nice being home, eating some good food, watching football all day. I kind of rested, didn't do a whole lot. Then started to gear up on the weekend heading into here in the Bahamas this week.
What happens to the golf clubs after this week? And it's not too far away from Kapalua, but do they get put up for a few days, or what happens?
Yeah, they'll be put up. I took a break after the Ryder Cup this year and did some celebrating, I guess, and hung the clubs up for a few weeks, which is as long as I've ever done. This time, I'll probably take a week or so off, and then just kind of. That's when a lot of the guys will be back in town, whether they're PGA Tour guys or web guys or even guys trying to make it through Q School, Latino America, all that. We get a good group back in Dallas, and so I'll probably hang them up for a week, but then everyone will start playing some games. So I'll probably play a lot of golf, not do as much practicing until we get closer to Hawaii.
Because you recently just put some new equipment in the bag, new irons. It seemed like obviously a very easy transition for you. You just won with them. How long does that testing process work? Or if you're staying with the same equipment company, is it really easy to just change out a set of irons?
Not necessarily. It has been for me going back a ways from the start of the AP2s. I had trouble switching to the 716s to start. I was having a lot of success with the ones I was playing, and then I found a set that kind of dug a little weird into the ground. So I was just, I was kind of stubborn about changing. And then my coach Cameron really wanted me to try out the Project X 6.5s instead of 6.0s, so a little stiffer shaft in the irons. And with that, we were also testing out kind of the CBs and the AP2s and trying to find a shaft iron combination. It took probably a couple full days of TrackMan and sessions at his place and trying to hit different shots, just seeing how they compare to the gamers I had. And we found out that they were the same, maybe even a little bit better in crosswinds. I'm just hitting it a little bit straighter in the crosswinds. There's not as much movement to the ball. So I just decided, hey, good time to try them out in Australia and then here at Tiger's event. They work fine there. Coming in here, play maybe a little bit more in the wind. So we'll kind of see how they perform here. But, yeah, I put those in the bag. Other than that, I actually switched to the new ball, too. Switched to the 2000 and, I guess it'll be the 17 Pro V1X. Haven't found much of a difference from the 15 other than just a little better in crosswind. Same thing as the irons. So with the same equipment, it's actually been a lot easier transitioning than maybe other guys have. But I've played Titleist my whole life. I just, when you trust something, it makes it a lot easier. Haven't put the new driver in yet, but hopefully pretty soon.
And I want to get in. I know you don't have a ton of time. I want to get into 2016 versus 2015 yet. At the same time, I know that's kind of a narrative that's been beaten to death. But I want to know, if I'm looking at stats, looking at strokes gained, crunching numbers, the only real significant dip in your play overall, I would say, was your irons, your approach, the green strokes gained stat. Do you care about those stats? Do you look into those stats as you game plan for a new year, or is that something that you can already kind of feel, or what's your approach towards the numbers?
Yeah, so we use strokes gained. We have for 3 or 4 years now. Mark Brody sends stuff over to Cameron. I don't dive into it too deep. I kind of ask Cameron and kind of tread on what kind of the depth that he wants me to be at, so I don't kind of go overthink it, but we found out from 60 to 150 yards, really the scoring approach yardage is where I fell off a little bit. And so we've really tried to nail stuff down in that range. And that's really just the wedges into 9, maybe 8 iron. It's the short iron play that I fell a little bit off of 2015. But like you said, everything else held pretty solid. I mean, I certainly can improve a bit more off the tee. Not necessarily distance, but more playing the right shots to be a little more accurate. But that the scoring distances are where most of the improvement needs to come. But we do dive into that. That's very important. We look at that normally in October. We look at it again in December. And then we kind of pick a plan for the year, kind of a practice plan when I'm at tournaments and at home to figure out how to tighten that gap.
Yeah, and along the same vein of, I think you and I are both in agreement that you took way too much heat for your 2016 season. You viewed this season as a success, as do I. You went from being the next best thing on the tour to literally being the best thing, to being the number one ranked in tour. When you're the next best thing, everybody loves you. When you're number one, people like to have an opinion on it. So, not necessarily in golf, how would you say your life was most impacted from your monster 2015 season?
It's being recognized, kind of honestly getting your butt kissed by everybody in a way. I mean, it really is the case. People laugh at everything you say, even when you're not that funny.
I did it.
I mean, legitimately, it's you go from things just change. I mean, I certainly have the people that have been with me since day one, which I'm lucky that's our team. But also, you know, my friends back home since high school. You know, those are my best friends to this day. So at home, everything's the same. You know, 15 kind of just took it on to, you know, a worldly, you know, I mean, all around the world now where I've gone, getting recognized, whether it's at a golf tournament or at just a random, you know, you stopped in to have a beer somewhere, it's bizarre. I mean, obviously, it makes things a bit different. You got to kind of watch yourself. You can't necessarily let loose the way you used to unless you find the right locations to. So, it certainly has tremendous advantages. I'm not trying to make it out to seem anything bad at all. I'm accomplishing my lifelong goals. It's a lot of fun. But there are certainly responsibilities that come with it. 16 is where you see the kind of what anybody that's in that spotlight has to deal with. I mean, you can't keep kind of a record-breaking year up every single year. Nobody does. Yet at the same time, how can you convince yourself that if you're more of a perfectionist? So it's been kind of the internal struggle in 2016. And that's something that I learned a lot this year. You know, there's going to be negativity. You know, I had a heartbreak at the Masters that was just, you know, kind of tough to let go for. I knew it would be, but probably won't fully be over that unless I or until I get another chance at a major championship and then, you know, capitalize on it. Until then, that'll be something that's sticking with me. It just, you know, that's what it is. But at the same time, Jack had, 19 second place finishes in majors? I mean, he had plenty that, you could probably correct me on the numbers there, but,
I think you're right.
Yeah, but so it's just, if you look at it from a 25-year career, I've started to look at big picture things more, and it settles me down a bit. Not trying to be so focused on the here and now, but looking at it, hey, you know, if we had this, what I like to say now and, whenever I'm asked about comparing 15 and why I didn't have the same success as 15, you know, if I did by the end of my career, I'd have 120 wins. what is it, that 50 majors? So, I mean, how exactly can you do that? You can't. So, it was a lot of fun. I'm telling you what, this year was a lot of fun too. I had a great time doing it. Two different kind of learning processes though.
Yeah, you're almost better off, I think, from a media perspective, spacing out when you win your majors rather than winning two yeah. at such a young age. But Rory even kind of predicted before the season started that you were going to be treated differently, kind of in the same way you mentioned, especially within the media. Did you feel that like throughout the season? I sensed some frustration from you with just the kind of questions that you got. So did you kind of feel... I don't want to say the wrath of the media, but did you feel like the questions changed and the attention you got was much different from them?
You know, just after the Masters, and then after that kind of wore off a little, it was the Olympics, and both I obviously regret decisions I made in both. So all in all, you know, I did, and I think it was a little bit of. A little bit of immaturity on my part, not recognizing that was going to keep coming. You know, like I said, in 15, everybody's kissing your ass. I mean, every question's good, all is good in the world of golf. And then, you know, that just can't stay that way all the time. And I think I just didn't want to recognize that, believe that. And it kind of set me off guard and got me a little short-tempered a couple times. But, at the same time... I like things, I don't like to necessarily tell them everything that's going on because, you know, then they're going to take it and run with it and you're going to keep on having to talk about it. So trying to find a balance there with the media was something that, you know, I wish I'd done a little bit better and a little earlier on just to settle down and say, you know, like I mentioned, I didn't realize this whole look at the big picture thing until a little late, but I feel great right now. I mean, honestly, I feel great right now. Had a lot of time off, got really healthy and a bit stronger and mentally really looked at a lot of things this past year and how to improve because, you know, it was a great year that if I look at it as a down year and it is a down year, then, man, that's one hell of a down year. So I'm really, really confident when I look at it that way.
Hey, last one on this topic. We'll move on to something more fun, I promise. But I don't want to say January 1 is a bad example because you won in Kapalua. But let's say if you could go back to like January 10 of last year and tell that version of Jordan Spieth something, what would you tell him?
It's not going to be as easy as it was in Hawaii. everything seemed to do that week. Be patient. I mean, just a little bit more patience. Again, I would just say to think about the longevity of not only a round of golf, but of a career. I don't regret any of the decisions I made on course. I mean, the way I play is always an aggressive nature. I think you of all people could probably appreciate that. I think, you know, going to go for broke and it's going to lead to heartbreak and it's going to lead to extreme triumph too. I mean, you got to play to win. And so I don't regret any kind of decisions. I would just tell myself to be patient and to not quite give out as much detail when it's not necessary. So, I mean, just, but at the same time, I'm happy that I went through the process of learning that throughout a year.
Very good. All right, on to a topic I know you like to talk about, the Ryder Cup. A lot to celebrate this year in that regard. I find the dynamic really fascinating because when from an accomplishment standpoint, you're a two-time major champion. Patrick Reed, while still a top 10 player in the game, just has not accomplished the same things that you have in your careers. Yet when it comes to Ryder Cup time, he is the alpha male in the pairing between the two. You've even referred to how you defer to him to concede whether or not you concede putts and whatnot. What is that dynamic like for you to be kind of in the passenger seat, whereas you know you are the fifth ranked player in the world at this point, 2-time major champion, yet you're kind of deferring to a guy that doesn't have the same track record as you.
It's oh man, it's a lot of fun. I mean. I know you guys, I know everybody, whether you're an American or European, had fun watching Patrick Reed, even the last two Ryder Cups. I mean, imagine being right by his side listening to the things he was saying as we walked down the fairways. I mean, it's exactly what you'd probably expect he was saying, and it makes it even better. It was an interesting position to be in as kind of a type A personality, having to, you know, just – just be like, all right, let's, all right, calm down, all right, get pumped up. You know, I mean, you know, the guy just wants, he wants to be in a position where he feels like his back's against the wall. It's where he plays his best. It's where he brings out his best. It's where he shows the best emotion. I mean, I thought I broke my thumb when I stood on the 17th. I remember this year, Patrick hold that wedge on number 6, a par 5,
yep,
when we were playing, I think it was best ball. Might have been alternate. I'm not sure, but he hold that wedge, and I threw my putter up in the air. I started running back to him, and he thought we were going for the chest bump, and I instead went for their normal high five. I mean, he took my hand off. I mean, I get on the tee on 7, and I grip the club, and I bring Michael over like I normally do, just to use the towel to wipe my hands and grip. And I was like, Mike, this isn't for the towel, dude. I literally can't feel my right hand right now. He's like, all right, we'll just put a smooth swing on it. I hooked this thing so far into the water left. So Patrick, that's your fault. You got this one too. I was like, it was, man, it just the fire he brings, just the, It's just he's Captain America, man, in that tournament. I love being his teammate. I love being a part of it. It's in the President's Cup last year, I partnered with Dustin Johnson for a couple rounds, and Patrick was so pissed at me that we were partnering. And so finally we're playing in the last evening, Saturday evening, I guess, in best ball. We got put back together. And we ham and egged it and shot something ridiculous because he was trying to beat me so bad. He wanted to he didn't give a crap who we were playing. He just wanted to, he was so pissed at me that week for going to DJ. He reminded me every time I saw him, even during that match. And then he just went out and made like 6 or 7 birdies in the round. And we closed him out in the dark. I mean, those team events are one of a kind. It's where you build kind of relationships with these guys, where when you're at a tournament like this with 18 players, everybody's going to be hanging out with everyone the whole week because you've already had those experiences together. I mean, it's amazing. For, you know, a few years ago, what was it, 4 years ago, I was, you know, getting ready for my last finals, and now these guys are the people I looked up to so much are now peers. I mean, it really is amazing. And those team events are what really brings it out on and off the course. I mean, instead of sitting there and saying, all right, Brant Snedeker's got this 20-footer to beat you in this tournament. And you've never – I mean, you obviously want him to be able to make and you to make it on top. But in these events, to watch these guys that you kind of are playing against and actually root for them and ride that momentum with them, it's special.
What you got to you can't say, like, you can't reference all the things that Reed says walking down the fairway and not give us like one example of just something crazy that he said at the Ryder Cup this year. That's suitable. That's repeatable.
I don't know what kind of words are acceptable here, but
everything's acceptable on here.
Everything's acceptable on here. Let's see. Let me try and give you an example here. It's just like the common, like, Patrick, look, these guys are in trouble. Like I'll walk over because the guy, he wants to hit it to a foot every time and then just kind of pump his chest, you know? And so I remember the first time I really recognized him in the Ryder Cup was when we played our first match ever in the Ryder Cup, and we played against Ian Poulter and Stephen Gallagher in Scotland at Glen Eagles. And we were on, I think it was the 5th hole of par 4, and we're playing best ball against them. And we're already one up, I think, early, and they are both in big trouble. Gallagher's in trouble off the tee. Poulter's now hit it in the water on the second. And I hit it kind of on the left side of the green, about 30, 40 feet. Patrick's last to hit. And I go, Patrick, he's like, what do you like here? And I'm like, dude, 25 feet left, we win the hole. He's like, no, I'm going right at the stick. He goes, I don't want to beat him by one. I want to thump him on this hole. It's like, dude, you get the same thing. You get one up on the hole, and you move to the next. All of a sudden, you're two up. And sure enough, he goes at the pin. I think he comes up short a little in the hazard. I've got like a 5-foot slider to tie the hole. I'm like, why are you doing this to me, man? And then the next hole, he hits it to a foot. So, you know, or he made like a 22-footer or something on six. So, I mean, it's stuff like that where he's just, it's about sticking the knife in instead of just, you know, playing the match for the match. And I think it's just so great. It brings out the best in him. He loves it. And when he's on, I mean, you saw it this year. I mean, he single-handedly took down Stenson Rose on that back nine. It was really kind of one of the more amazing performances I've ever seen, and fortunate to watch it right in front of me. I was trying to help him out. Made a few pars, but geez, I mean, what was I going to do? I mean, the guy just wanted to stay out of his way.
You did start the Patrick Reed chant on 16 as he was coming up for putting for Eagle, so don't say you didn't contribute to that one.
I was certainly contributing to it. I was still probably 30 yards away from him, but I mean, that guy, he loves himself a club twirl. He loves it. If he could, I mean, right after he strikes out, I mean, I think it was like a 3-iron or a hybrid or something into that hole. He struck in, he's twirling and doing the walk, and I'm standing with Tiger. I'm just kind of looking at Tiger like, are you watching this right now? He's just smirking. I mean, he didn't really know what to say. It was funny. We had a good moment with Tiger. We had a good moment. It's a funny story. We were playing number 6, actually, and it might have been the actual same match where he hold the shot, the wedge shot. We hit a tee ball out there, and Tiger, we're walking with Tiger up to the ball, and Tiger says something like, or I said something like, man, Tiger, you've never been able to play this good. You know, I was just joking with him, saying like, and we were playing alternate shot, actually. This was a different match, and we've not missed a shot yet. I think Patrick just chipped in the hole before, and we're like 3 up on Sergio and Rafa, and I'm like, Tiger, you've never played this good an alternate shot in your life or something. He says something like something smart back, and I want to say I wish I could recall exactly how it went right now, but something where Tiger goes, Patrick said something back to Tiger. Tiger goes, "Don't worry, Patrick. You only need 79 more. You need like 74 more wins and 14 more majors." And then I go, "Patrick, you can't talk to him because you can't even talk to me. You need 2 more majors and like 4 more wins to get to me." I don't. It was something. And then of course, you know, he steps up, and it's that kind of talk that gets him going. And he just went off there right afterwards. But it was just kind of a funny moment with Tiger talking, because you don't really hear Tiger talk about everything he's dropped, you know, to go back on Patrick. And he used it there because he was like, you know, screw this guy. I'm using this right now. Who is this guy?
That's fantastic. So, you know, for the record, we've coined what he did on 16 with that twirl. We call it the Reed Coil.
There you go. I like that.
There you go.
The Reed Coil.
So how much say did Reed really have in you guys going back out for that final match? Because what's been reported is that he refused to be sat. Were you guys really going to be sat? And is he like, did you want to sit?
So,
no. Okay.
No. From the get-go, we were Tiger was what he called our, you know, our team leader. And he had told us ahead of time. He goes, you guys get off and running an alternate shot. You're playing again. And then we just kind of took care of that. I mean, we ended up blowing that lead to them. Oh, it just stings me still now that we blew that lead to the Spaniard. But at the time, I mean, we were 4 or 5 up during the middle of that match. I mean, so they were. I mean, Tiger came on. I want to say 12 tee box, and he told us you guys are going back out in the afternoon. And I don't know what happened after that. We kind of the bed a little right after that, but we knew we were going back out. We love the best ball format. We just knew that between us two, whenever we talked to each other, we knew that we could play our way into playing 5 matches, and that's, you know, it wasn't about trying to you know, with our words, tell anybody. It was, we can play our way into 5 matches. I think Patrick, in his own talks with Davis or Tiger, may have said, you know, "I'm definitely playing. I'm you want me playing," but I couldn't tell you for sure what was said.
Is Greller still nearby you? You mentioned he might be.
Greller's right by me here. We're putting him on speaker. He's trying to run away.
He's scared. Well, the question's for you anyways, but so.
Hey, come on. Everyone's listening.
So we are obviously proponents of the Pray for Ted Scott hashtag, which is obviously referencing Bubba getting on Ted Scott. And at times this year, it seemed like you were giving Greller a bit of grief on the golf course, and a hashtag pray for Greller did emerge at a certain point. So I'm wondering how that, whether or not there was ever any post-round discussion on anything like that, or is this just something that happens on the course that just you shake off?
That's the first we heard of this. Michael put his hands up as if he was pumped about that. I'll tell you, Mike's got a rough life, man. He lives a tough one. I feel bad for the guy. What do you got to say about that? Boy, the ocean. I guess he doesn't want to partake.
He's shy.
No, man, it just gets intense out there, man. We talk constantly to each other, feel very involved with each other during all the shots. During all the decision making, we're trying to get a bit quicker. I mean, one thing I'd like to do is certainly speed up my play. I've gotten a little bit of a reputation for taking a bit of time. Actually, a few of my bad times, actually three of them, came on number 11 of Augusta this year with swirling winds and a 4-iron into that green. You know, good luck committing to a shot. But yeah, I mean, we talk all the time. We're very very into it. Mike's very even keeled. Which is funny because when he's playing himself, it's one of the worst mental games you've ever seen in your entire life. But as a caddy, it's like you would think the guy had never played golf in his life before. You know, like he's almost like, it's almost like, I don't know how to describe it. I mean, he's so knowledgeable, but at the same time, so relaxed and almost just assuming of what's going to come on either side and knows what to say on either side. So I feel very fortunate to have Mike. And, he's not standing by me. That's why I'm saying these things right now.
you'd never let him hear that in person.
Of course. But man, yeah, I mean, we win together, we lose together, you know, and we both have accepted that we take the triumph together and we both take the blame together. So hopefully it comes off that way. Obviously certain things, certain times get emotional. You know, I'll never say mud ball on a par three, though. Trust me. It's okay if Bubba hears that. We give him crap for it all the time.
I don't think Bubba is a fan of the No Leg Up podcast. Just going to throw that out there. But
it's never too late.
Yeah. That's interesting you brought that up about your pace of play. I thought, yeah, during the Masters, there was a lot to that. And I defended you on it in the sense that with everything that was going on, I felt like you weren't that confident in the way you were striking the ball. You had a lot of really great shots that week, but you had some really shaky ones, and you were just taking extra time to have absolute confidence over it. And then it came down to, I think you've even referenced the shot you hit on 12 that you felt like you rushed yourself a little bit. So
still took 2 minutes to set a rush myself. It was one of those shots where every time you get on it, you want to just step up and hit. You know, just let kind of your instincts take over, let your hand-eye coordination take over. It doesn't matter how it looks, whatever. Just got a little ahead of it. But yeah, I mean, it's something Cameron and I are working on because I necessarily care what other people think to change the way I play golf, because that's not the case at all. I used to be a really fast player, and over the past year, 2 years is when it's kind of changed. I mean, and the reason we want to shift it back is actually for my own execution. I actually, like my practice now with Cameron, he'll put a few balls out and he'll say, you get one look, then take it back. And in the middle of your backswing, I'm going to call high fade, high draw, low fade, low draw, whatever, and you have to create the shot then. So it's creating kind of an instinctive awareness of trying to take the club back quicker. You don't know what shot you're going to play yet, and then just create it after he says it on the way down. So it's kind of good training. We've been quicker in committing to shots, being a little more lax about it, not to the smallest detail. And it helped me out. I mean, Australia was a lot better. I started doing a little the second half of the year this year. But yeah, something that we're certainly working on. Again, not because I felt like anybody's opinion really got to me. It's more, you know, hey, that's not a great reputation to have if people are like, oh, shoot, I'm playing with Jordan tomorrow. He plays slow. You know, that's not cool. So that, and I feel like it'll actually help me.
There you go. You got time for a couple more questions? Or I know you got to go, you got to run, so don't.
Yeah, no, that's good. No worries.
If I ask you, like, I don't mean like a power rankings or who's ranked number one right now or who's the hottest, but if I ask you who's the best golfer in the world, who's the first person you just thought of?
I thought of Rory. I mean, outside, I believe in myself. I think right now Rory's capabilities are as high as anybody. I thought it was amazing. I mean, I thought it was just – when I looked at myself this year and the way that everyone was thinking of my year, and then I thought of the way people were writing off Rory McIlroy. I was like, you guys have no idea what you're doing. This guy is unbelievably talented. You know, I mean, I think this whole, you know, a lot of it comes down to the confidence in putting, right, to close out. And he's got that confidence in putting back, whether putter or just a new look or the ability to be able to not be forced to play something, that kind of thing. You got to watch out for this guy. I mean, he's going to be back to number one in the world at some point, I think pretty soon. I certainly hope that, you know, we can battle it out with him and get back ourselves. But I think he, DJ, J-Day, I mean, the guys are so talented. Best ball striker, Henrik Stenson. If I'm sitting on the range watching somebody hit balls, there's nobody else I'd rather watch than what Henrik Stenson strike his irons. I mean, it's an absolute joke. The thing's on a string. But yeah, I mean, that was a very, very long answer that could have been one word, but I'd say myself and then Rory.
Well, you answered the next question anyways. The next one's going to be, who do you like to stop and watch hit balls on the range? So if you could swap out one of your skills for the same skill of another player, like if you could, you wouldn't be your putting, but if you wanted to trade your putting for somebody else, what skill would you swap out and who would you choose?
I would have Dustin Johnson hit drives for me. It's somewhat tough playing with him because you really need to get the tee first so you don't try and do too much after watching him hit a tee ball.
Do you ever just look away when he does tee off so you're not, don't even try to match it?
No, because it's still so cool to watch at the same time.
The sound probably just echoes in your ear anyways, whether or not you were watching it. Do you have, so let's say there's a day where you've got no commitments, nothing planned for the day. I'm guessing there aren't too many of those that you have. How badly do you want to jump in the car and go to the golf course still? How much do you still love golf? Like if you don't need to be practicing on a day, how much do you want to be going out and playing?
You know, there's not many days where I am away from the golf course. I mean, I love it. Now I really appreciate when you get a few good players that are in town for a game, you know, to get in and have that kind of competition while still kind of giving each other crap, you know, just the stuff you can't necessarily do in a tournament that I used to do growing up all the time. I love playing golf. I was never really a range rat. I love getting out on the course and kind of creating shots and different lies, different wins. So I'd say very likely that I'd still go to the course, try and find a group to play with. But at the same time, you know, you go on a 3 or 4 week stint of, you know, maybe you took a day off here or there in that, but you're in contention a few weeks in a row. I mean, it takes a lot out of you mentally, you know, when you're playing for what, you know, when you're playing for whether it's world ranking points or whatever, maybe a major. So there are definitely times where I get back and I'm like, I don't even want to look at my golf clubs. I don't even want to know where they are right now. So that's changed from junior golf just because of the kind of level of commitment that we have now where, you know, I'm not in school from 8 till 3 and then just trying to squeak out, you know, a few range balls in 9 holes after school. You know, this is now I'm at the course from 8 till 3, you know, so it's changed a bit. I never wanted to go back to school when I was doing that 8 to 3. So sometimes it's like that, but I love the game. I love playing if you can get a group to play.
If you and I, so I'm a rusty 3 handicap that doesn't play much anymore. If you and I play a game, how many strokes do you have to give me for it to be even remotely interesting?
Normally, if we're doing when we're playing with, and we've got friends that are anywhere from, you know, 0 to a 15 that we'll play with, normally we put ourselves the say I'm in town, Ryan Palmer's in town, you know, we'll say we're plus fives. So I would stay four aside.
No, that's not happening. I'm gonna need more than that.
That's in like a wolf game where, you know, you team up. I really haven't played many kind of straight on Meaver. You know, like a lot of guys play MJ in Florida. There, you know, Ricky will play against MJ or Justin. I think they play off plus six or seven in order to play him. Just a straight up game. But normally we like playing a wolf game or quarters or left and right, something like that, and we'll just give strokes accordingly.
how true is MJ's handicap? I feel like that's one of those like celebrity athlete handicaps that gets overinflated.
You know, I've never played golf with him. So I don't even know what handicap is, to be honest with you, but better of MJ more than he does of them. But I'm sure he probably enjoys his wins more, because I don't think he really cares much about the money he loses.
I think he's good on that front. So I'll let you get out of here. I know I'm taking up more time than you have available. But I found it really interesting that you've gone from, like, in 2013 being a guy that was using sponsor's exemption to, you know, trying to get your card, to now being one of the biggest brand stewards in the game. Like, did this transition feel really quick to you, like to where you are today? Did you expect to be here 4 years ago?
Not necessarily. No. To be totally honest with you, 4 years ago, I went through second stage of Q school and I missed it, and I hit 65 of 72 greens in regulation, and I hit 30 of them inside of 15 feet, and I didn't make it through. I was so off in my putting woes. I was so mental. It was bad. And I was watching tournaments. I was watching Hawaii, I think. I was watching Sony, and Russell Henley and Scott Langley, I think, were battling it out. And I knew these guys. I was on the Walker Cup team with them, and I knew I could play with those guys. And I'm watching them go head to head and make all these putts. I'm like, how am I going to do that? I mean, I was literally that. I had that little confidence in my putting and ability for that to help carry me. And so back then there was no chance I could have seen what happened. I just kind of dug through it with work. I mean, I found a way to get over. I had short putting lows, found a way to get over that. And then just practiced working on my speed, stroke, and then tried to improve the rest of the game in the process. But through 2013, you know, I mean, obviously that was a whirlwind year. That one went by really fast with a lot of different changes from, you know, I'm not sure if or where I'm going to be able to play this year, to, okay, we got web.com status, to 2 weeks later, okay, we have PGA Tour status, just in a 4 week stretch. So, you know, that was where, but when I look back, does it feel like it's all happened really fast or slow? I mean, it really depends on how I look at it. Cause, some days I feel like it was yesterday I was in high school. Some days I feel like it was 20 years ago. I mean, there's a lot that's happened. I feel like I've lived a career, you know, for some people. Yet, you know, a few years in, and hopefully 20 plus to go. So it's just weird. It's weird. It just depends on how you look at it. But I certainly feel very fortunate the way things have worked out. I mean, you got to create your own luck, and in the process, hopefully you get some good breaks you did or didn't deserve, and like hitting a flag stick on a bunker shot that gets you PGA Tour status, you know, I mean, but that comes with believing that it can come, you know, I mean, you believe it's against you, there's no chance you're making that putt, but you believe that it can lip in, you got that entire hole to make it, the thing goes in, it just does. It's crazy how much goes on in the head and how it controls the outcome.
You caught that bunker shot then, didn't you?
I caught it closer to the ball than I wanted. It was one of those where you're trying to kind of carry it halfway and run it out, and it was one of those that had a little spin. I think it would have held in on the fringe on the other side. That's what I tell everybody. Brandon Snedek gives me a really hard time about that. He's like, there's no doubt that was one hopping into the water. I'm just like, Brant, the thing was spinning. He's like, no chance. So I'm still going to live by I wasn't going to win the tournament, but I wasn't going to make double. I was going to have a long par putt. but it was certainly a game-changing break for me.
What is a tournament week? What does it look like socially for you? I mean, I imagine everywhere you go, there's somebody you know that you know wants to have dinner, whatnot. Like pre-practice rounds, are you doing stuff socially? And then, like once the week starts, do you shut everything down at 10 o'clock? Or what's a normal tour week look like socially for you?
You know, it depends on the week. It depends on where you are. You know, like the AT&T at Pebble. With everyone that's there that week, you typically are meeting up, having more dinners, having a little more fun, and because you're just in a cool position with some really 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 cool people to be around, whether they're athletes or actors, singers, songwriters, whatever it may be, kind of picking their brain, learning a lot. I mean, you just don't really get that chance. And then you get other weeks where you're in places where you just kind of go back to the hotel, or you go to the gym, or whatever it may be. I would say, for the most part, before the tournament starts, a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, socially, normally going out to dinner with, other guys, a couple of those nights. During the tournament, it kind of depends on what everyone's tee times are, but you normally try. I mean, the last couple years, now that, I've got a lot of friends out here, the first year or two, I was the youngest by five. Ricky was probably second youngest on tour 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, he's, 4 or 5 years older than me. So, I didn't really have many people to hang out with. Now I've got a lot of my friends I've grown up with out on tour, and it's a lot of fun sharing that experience. So we certainly love to go out. We go to dinner, but yeah, I mean, we're not. Sometimes fortunately, we're not out like the guys in the 70s till 2 a.m. Faraday rolling in, trying to get up at 7 a.m. for his tee time at 7:50. That's not. He's told me some of those stories, but normally in bed, or at least getting ready to be back by 10 during a tournament week, and then Sunday night we'll kind of have a few beers. So that's kind of it. Yeah, I mean it's a lot of fun because we go to cool places. We do a lot of fun things. At the same time, if you really want to have a chance to succeed that week, you gotta be disciplined.
Yeah,
it's kind of boring, I guess, for what you guys were looking for.
No. I figured that was the case. I mean,
start getting carried away and it catches up with you now, and the way the game's changed, not everybody's doing that.
Yeah, no, I think that's more the modern day. There's not too many guys that are doing the old John Daly or Faraday rolling in that late. But I don't know how much you've gotten to look at or gotten to play Aaron Hills. I know you've played Quail Hollow. I would assume you have. How do you think the major venue set up for you this year?
I played, I feel obviously very confident about the first one. And then we go to Aaron Hills. I played the U.S. Amateur there, played it well. Lost in the quarterfinals. A track that's going to, if you're comparing like the U.S. Opens of the Shinnecock, the Oakmont variety, this is going to be more of the Chambers Bay variety, a little bit different, more of a link style. So I feel good about our history there. And then Quail Hollow, at Birkdale, I haven't played. I played the Junior Open at Hesketh, which is a club right next to Birkdale, and we went and actually watched the first round of Birkdale that year, the last time it was there. I think Padraig Harrington won it, and we watched him a bit that first round. And then Quail Hollow I played in 2013. I think it's an awesome golf course, great finishing holes. It's going to be a really exciting tournament to finish. I think Birkdale is going to be the toughest of the venues, in my opinion. That course is just mean. But the rest, I mean, it's going to be a fun year for the majors. I mean, this year was a great year for major venues. I mean, a great year. 2015 I was the one who came out liking Chambers Bay. So it was a phenomenal place, venues there too. So, all in all, that's what we're gearing up for. That's what it's all about.
Sweet. All right, Jordan Spieth, thank you so much for your time, man. I'll finally let you get out of here. Best of luck this week in the Bahamas, the new season. I'm picking you to win the Masters, so I'm confident in what's in store for 2017, and thank you for taking the time with me today.
Of course, man. You got it. No worries. Appreciate that.
We'll catch up soon, man. Thank you.
All right, sounds good, man. Hey, keep doing your thing. I love it.
All right, appreciate it, man. Take care.
fucking right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!